Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And we've got Vignesh Ram, Amit M, Sheratan KD, Nilesh Sinha, and Simple Mats, Akib Mohammed, a few people there in the comment section, Revant Nayanavari as well.
Yeah, usually we don't answer questions like, where were you? Hmm. We were watching the World Cup semi-final because Deandra Dotton made it a lot closer than we thought it was going to be at that stage. What a performance she has in that game. Like, she's come out of retirement. She doesn't bowl anymore. She's bowling absolutely brilliantly. And then she's like, oh, we're losing. I'll just start whacking sixes everywhere. How great is it we're going to have a new World Cup champion? You know, it's not that often that we know that coming in. Absolutely brilliant. We've got the semi-finalists versus the chokers. So someone has to break the hoodoo here. And also, just another shout out to poor Susie Bates, who barely bowls anymore. And they were just like, how about if you just bowl the 20th over in the most important over in your entire career and our entire history? What a fantastic end to that. Considering most of that second part of that game, West Indies were miles out of it, right? Like, well done to them for coming back in. Fletcher as well, you know, a couple of hits towards the end, but good fun.
Yeah, no, those hits towards the end were actually really exciting. And I mean, just the prospect of having this final and a new champion. You know, South Africa versus New Zealand is a final in all of cricket that we've never had. So it has its own novelty. And it was a fantastic game. We had two brilliant semi-finals for different reasons, right? And now we're going to have a new champion. So all eyes on the Women's T20 World Cup final.
Oh, just before we finish on this, the only other thing I was going to say is, I think about a week ago, this tournament was going to be remembered for bad fielding.
Yeah.
It's not going to be remembered for that anymore.
It's probably going to be the most remembered Women's ICC World Cup that we've had in a long time, right? The West Indies is the only one that comes
maybe
close.
Maybe 2016. Yeah, you're right. 2016 is the one, right?
Anyway, the premise of this podcast is that 1,348 days later and 11 games later, Pakistan have finally managed to win a test match at home, and they had a 6-game losing streak as well going on in test cricket. All of those tests were captained by Shaan Masood. That has come to an end as well. And I mean, Jared, personally, I moved back November 2022 and I've, you know, covered, you know, 9 test matches from the ground, one of which was Lords and the other were Pakistan tests. Up until now, there were 2 draws and 5 losses, and I'd never seen England lose either. Even at Lords, they won. So it took them nearly 2 years to give me this experience, right? To watch Pakistan win at home. And really, like, it was a long time coming.
It's incredible, isn't it? We've just talked about one semi-final there, which was, you know, we're going to see a final with something incredible. But if you go back, South Africa beating Australia, West Indies beating England, you've got, you know, at the very least, New Zealand rolling India for 46, right? Go back a couple of weeks before, you've got the first test. You have the Bangladesh series against Pakistan. And the Bangladesh test against India as well, right? Like, all these incredible things have happened. This one, of course, was the most Pakistan one thing to happen, which is, let's be honest, they made a bunch of mistakes here. Why are you playing on the same pitch 2 games in a row? Why did you drop all your best players? Why did you decide that seam bowling would never work again? All of these things, and they still won the test because it's Pakistan and that's how things go, right? This actually reminds me of the 2017 victory where I was like, I'm so happy they've won, but I'm like, they're going to learn no lessons from this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's generally the feeling as well, because look, they rolled the dice with the used surface. They recycled a pitch. It's never really been done before in test cricket, not to my knowledge. They took a gamble with the toss, right? That was important. They were like, okay, we're going to hope that we get to bat first. They got lucky, I suppose, in that regard as well. And then they loaded their side with spinners, none of whom were, you know, deemed fit enough to be their starting spinner in the previous test match. That's also important over here. That guy was Abrar. And yeah, I mean, they had then, with the only seamer as well who started hobbling, I don't know if you caught that, Amir Jamal.
Oh, I forgot that bit. Yeah.
That happened. And then, of course, they dropped 3 of their major players, creating absolute chaos, which we will discuss in a footmarks. We're not wasting any
also,
breath here.
Also, didn't they also change their selection committee again mid-test match?
Yeah. Right, like, before the England series, there was a new selection committee or something. Or actually, right after the first test.
But there was another announcement, wasn't there, that now the captain and the coach is not... So they announced the change, they announced an umpire as a selector, which is already pretty funky. And then they were like, now we're going to change it again. Like on a minute-by-minute basis, there's still chaos going on in we haven't even talked about it. We do a huge podcast with Shoaib Malik, and it looks like now that was his job interview for a position we didn't even know was available.
Absolutely. It was, you know, complete and utter chaos. And I've seen a lot of tweets saying, oh, Pakistan are back, baby. Trust me, they're not. Like, this was a very unique situation in which a lot of things went in their favor. And of course, they capitalized on those conditions and all. And, you know, in the most Pakistan fashion ever, they've gone on to win their first test match on home soil since February 2021. And just on the reused surface pitch, right? I mean, we were driven to a point, or at least I was, where I was like, okay, yeah. You know, day 8, day 9 pitch is probably going to do something, because for the first 5 days, that surface did absolutely nothing, right?
Yep.
We have been reduced to a point where the thought of a reused surface, or the idea, seems attractive because we want compelling test cricket. But that's what we got over here. Despite the sluggish outfield as well, the surface kept changing day by day, and it made for a good test match.
No, it did. It was really interesting that I did a podcast with Rob Barron on Cricket 8, and the draw was like 5-1 or 4-1 or something like that. And he was just saying, lay every dollar you have on the fact that this match is not going to be a draw and you're going to do very well. Because it was just going to get worse. And I kind of feel, I don't want to take this away from the Pakistan batting or the Pakistan spinners, but I did kind of feel that because the wicket was just kind of going to get worse and worse and worse, winning the toss was way more important than
absolutely.
A normal. This is kind of like one of those old-fashioned Indian wickets where you just like, you win the toss, you make as many runs as you can, and then it just gets worse all the way through the game, and you hope you can kind of hold on. So it was incredibly important in that case. So if Pakistan lose this toss, is this still happening? Now, who knows? Because England,
they probably end up looking really silly, and the whole energy of this podcast would be very, very different, right? I mean, we're still talking about these things, but
the energy would be different, but the conversation would be exactly the same.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I saw a tweet from Cameron Ponsonby during the first test that they can just do this as a joke. And they went on and actually did it, which was hilarious. But at the same time, I was like, you know what? I'm all here for it. I would rather watch cricket on this sort of a surface where we know things will get exciting as opposed to, you know, highways. Because that just makes for such dull cricket that, you know, you cannot promote the game or sell the game that way. Oh, well, Ramiz Raja thinks that you sell the game through Babar, and that's the only way to do it. But radical. But then again, a lot of chips in the toss basket. And
yeah, it's funny. Someone's put a comment in going demerit points in order for Pakistan. India gets demerit points straight away. The pitch slightly turns. Well, they don't. I mean, that's I've never seen more nonsense written down anywhere. But this wasn't a hard pitch to bat on. It was probably as the game got on, went on, it got harder. But what England? Pakistan made 360, and England almost made 300 in the first innings. And Pakistan still made over 200 in the third. So it wasn't a ragging turner. It was what we're saying is though. It was going to be a lot easier to bat on day one, and it was just going to get harder and harder and harder, you know, all the way through. And I think that's a fair, there's nothing wrong with a wicket like that. The reason you wouldn't want these kinds of wickets all the time is more to do with the fact that it probably makes the game a little bit too toss dependent. And we don't want to be in a situation where teams are reusing pitches because the first one's so flat, you could use it again. So
there's plenty of arguments from that. I asked him, I was like, you know, the surface was a reused one and that's not a feasible solution for the future. You can't always do that, right? Make sure there's a game or maybe they can, I don't know, have special 5-day games between random people on the surface. But he said that we want to be adaptable and want to be able to win games of test cricket on any sort of surface. But that remains to be seen. We know that Pakistan can defeat England on a reused surface, one which can offer a lot of turn. But I mean, that doesn't take away from the fact that both of Pakistan's primary finger spinners took all 20 wickets, which has only happened like 7 times in history. And the first time since 1972 when Dennis Lilly and Bob Massey bowled England out. So it was quite spectacular that Pakistan, who couldn't, you know, buy a wicket or whatever, even afford like a glimmer of hope when it came to wicket taking, they've gone on and just used 2 bowlers for all 20. So it is a little funny.
Sorry, this is the nutcase in the messages. He keeps going on about if India does turn as evil BCCI. We have been pro Indian spinning wickets on this channel for so long. Just delete your account, buddy. I mean, we've got to be realistic here. You're wrong place to do your nonsense. And it's not true that they get demerit points every time it spins. And also, what we're talking about from this particular wicket is it's not that it was biased towards Pakistan. Because I think also England would have done quite well. It's a wicket that if you batted well, like if you look at the innings, they just go down all the way through. It's a really, really interesting thing. And that's because it was a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10th day wicket. So it's a very different thing. But you're right. I think from Pakistan's point of view, I mean, it is phenomenal. If you follow the history of cricket like I do, you see in the old days, it was quite common for two bowlers to just be the ones bowling over and over again, right? Like it, Spofforth and Boyle basically invented international cricket by doing this back in the ye olde days. And you don't see it anymore.
These two bowled throughout the fourth innings. There was no change.
That's what I mean. That's what you used to see on the old scorecards. Like, how many times have we seen that? You sometimes might see two bowlers share 10 wickets, right? Or Ajaz Patel or Anil Kumble or Jim Lake could do that on their own. It's very rare in modern cricket to only see two bowlers bowl, right? That's the weird thing, right? And there was there any stage that we kind of thought there was going to be a bowling change? I don't think so. Maybe Brook and Stokes, if they'd gone a little bit longer, you might have seen a change. But it was like there was no real reason to do it in that second innings. That's fantastic old school cricket. But look, I don't think this suddenly means that Noman Ali is going to be the great spinner of Pakistan's future. I thought in the first innings, I didn't think he bowled particularly well. I thought the pitch favoured him massive. Like the kind of spinner he is, I thought he was brilliantly set up for the other one. But Sajid Khan, I really liked the way he bowled all the way through this game. And, I'm way more interested. And also, didn't he tell Joe Root out on the ground at one stage? He said, "You're the wicket I've always wanted." Like, I like stuff like that. That's pretty cool. I like the way he bowled with the new ball when England were coming at him in the first innings, I think that was. There was a lot to like for a team that couldn't take any wickets at all. And to be fair, if you go and look at our podcast and our videos and all this, what we had said is that the spin bowlers were marginally worse than the opposition spin bowlers, but the seam bowlers had been a lot worse. So, hey, I don't know. Just don't pick seam bowlers anymore. It's the panic button, but sometimes you got to panic.
Yeah, I mean, with Pakistan cricket, you always get one of these situations where nothing makes sense, but somehow they manage to win, right? This is similar to that or is an example of that. And just on the spinners, right, of course, Sajid seems like such a wonderful personality. One of those aggressive cricketers you kind of want to see on this pitch with his crazy eyes, right? He stares down your soul.
And it's a good combination of eyes and mustache, isn't it?
And bald head. He's really got everything.
Right. It's the three. Even his beard, it's very neat in the gap. Like, there's a lot going on there. He kind of does look like, I don't know, like a villain from like a Hong Kong action movie, maybe in the 80s or something. There's something kind of like he's from I don't even know where it is, but I know he's a villain from a movie I have seen before, I'm sure. Like, he's a very cool looking character. Do you know what I mean? There's personality there. And I really enjoyed watching him bowl.
Yeah, Amit M is calling him Sajid Konda, Terminator, Bald John Wick. The eyes,
Bald John Wick is perhaps the best thing I've ever heard. I mean, there's nothing to do with John Wick with him at all, but I love every part of it.
I mean, it's just that energy, right? It's the eyes. They're crazy. And it's interesting, if you watch the start of the innings when England were batting first, he was just getting everything wrong. He messed up a run-out chance for Zach Crawley, then gets slams for four, then actually gets an LBW, and the decision is reversed via DRS. And then he goes on from there to take 9 wickets in this game, including that 7 for 111 in the first dig. And not to mention that 65-run partnership in the third innings with Salman Ali Azhar.
I was going
to
say, he's batting
very,
as well,
very crucial, right? Like,
now, this just was take me Pakistan's... back to that first innings. Hmm. But just take me back to that first innings, because I just want to ask one question about it. he bowls early on, and I thought he bowled a couple of really good balls, and then they kind of got after him. And then, as you said, the run out, he fumbles the ball when. He does fumble the ball, but he actually knocks the stumps over. Then he fumbles the ball, but he fumbles the ball back onto the stumps, but it's too late by then. Did he get taken out of the attack and then brought back? Am I remembering right?
Yes, and like, when England were 211 for two, that's when Sajid comes on and he wreaks absolute havoc, right? He reduces them to 225 for six. So
exactly,
for no runs, basically, England lost four wickets, and that's where the day ended, and all of a sudden Pakistan were on top.
And the reason that that struck me, as a person watching from the outside who, you know, hasn't seen him play all that much, I would have seen him play maybe in 2021 or 2022, but he's, 31, 32 years old?
Yeah.
We know he's obviously played, you know, in England and developed and everything else. But, like, this is potentially, maybe not his last chance, but it's potentially one of his last chances to really have the career that he's probably always dreamed of. They've gone after you a little bit with the new ball. You've stuffed up a run out. Like, that England are now in a position at 120 for two. My memory is that England were, if not favourites, they were really close to being favourites in that game at that point. I think they were shorter than Pakistan, but the draw was in there as well for a little while, as I said before. So, like, it could have easily gone the other way. So, that's an incredible moment. And also, I don't want to take anything away from Noman Ali, but those were the wickets that were harder to get, right? That first innings was, especially when the other team set. And, you know, Joe Root's out there and everything else. I just, nothing but praise from him. I was watching him bowl with Gareth Batty. And and Gareth Batty's quite, I don't want to throw Bats under the bus here, but Bats is quite full on with spin. Like, if a spinner isn't tip top, he will be just like, that's rubbish. He shouldn't be bowling. And he was going, this guy looks all right. Like, you know, this looks like a good bowler here. And that was in the first spell when he got yanked off. Yeah. So look, I think all credit goes to him for that effort, effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that was Pakistan's highest third innings score in all of 2024. And he was responsible for it because of his batting, right? I mean, kind of. Those 65 runs when he was
world's tallest garden gnome comes to mind there. That kind of phrase, doesn't it? We've outscored all the other times. We never scored any runs.
he gets a lot of revs on the ball, right? That's what I like about Sajid Khan. And he, like, even in conversation with me in the press conference, mentioned how initially, you know, the ball was just turning off of the patches on the side. So you had to bowl outside off stump. And then he caught Harry Brook camping on his back leg, which he also spoke about. So he is someone who's intelligent and thinks about the game. And obviously, these guys will work as far as the surface is assisting them, right? The Nomans and the Sajids. But I feel like he was deservedly player of the match because those seven wickets in the first innings are more important than Noman's eight for in the second. And also, you know, he was contributing elsewhere as well and redeemed himself for that run.
He could have taken wickets in the second innings. Like, I mean, you know, there was a couple of LBWs where he just spun it too far and, you know, and all sorts of things. And there's no reason why Ben Stokes couldn't have run down the wicket and thrown his bat when facing him as well. Like, you know, there were things that could have gone his way at any, especially when the tail enders came in and everything else. So,
dude, that bat went super high. Like, I was in the press box and I was like, holy shit. Like, that bat has
gone up. The photo looks fake, right?
Yeah,
the photo looks fake when you see. I don't know if you guys have seen it. I think Wisden put the best clip I saw online of it anyway. And when you see it, you're just like, that. It just looks photoshopped. But we saw it happen live, so we knew it happened. And I still thought it looked photoshopped.
Yeah, and it's funny how Sajid was the better bowler or better spinner out of the two. And Noman ends up with the 11 for 147. And his 8 for 46 in the fourth innings is actually, those are the best Pakistan bowling figures since Abdul Qadir's 9 for at home, right? That is insane. Wow. He also scored handy runs with the bat, right? And he's, even though he looks like he's 45, right? And no exaggeration, legit looks like 45. He looks older than Jared. I can say that.
I'm not sure he looks like he remembers his 45th birthday.
He's got ears better than Mohammad Rizwan, because there was one instance where he had Crawley caught behind and Rizwan didn't appeal and he was like, no, review this. He got him out. This is a guy who's played a lot of domestic cricket and he also provides a lot of value. So I think in Pakistan's favor, one big thing that's gone in this test match is that now they know who their spin bowling options are Because they didn't even know that before, right? You were a bra or bust. And now you're like, okay, maybe we can rely on these two.
I mean, you talk about his age. It is funny thinking about the two of them because one looks like the most charismatic, fun, party guy. Bold John Wick or whatever it was that was in the comments before. And the other guy looks like the person in HR that you're taken to when you're caught, like taking a photocopy of your ass, right? Like it's so different. But again, like you are talking about, you're talking about a cricketer who's played more, I'm just having a look now, 15, 16 test matches. Mm. His record for a modern Pakistani spinner is not bad. Like it's not
averaging 30.
Yeah. I mean that is a good record.
If you look at his last two games, right, Pakistan won a test match the last time Numan Ali played when he took 7 for whatever versus Sri Lanka, 7 for 70 or something like that. And he comes back and then he takes 11 in the game. So last two test matches, 18 wickets. I'm sure those numbers looked a lot worse before these games, right? Because now he's averaging 30. But honestly, for someone who can also pitch in with the bat, that's quite good.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to know, you know, I don't know that much about him. I'll be honest, as someone who was watching him, like, I just thought, like, that's a pretty bog standard left arm finger spinner here. Like, I kind of thought because of the pitch, he was going to come more into his own at the end because I figured everyone would. although I thought he bowled brilliantly at the end. But, you know, I don't think it's like suddenly he's a savior of Pakistani cricket or anything. But again, he does look like someone who knows what he's doing, right? He knows where he's putting the ball in the right area and he's clearly experienced. I mean, it says on Cricket Info he's 38. I think he might have like a son who's 38. Look, fantastic effort from both of them. And who else in the batting is worth talking about, I suppose?
I mean, Kamran Ghulam, the Babar replacement. He scored 118 in his debut test innings. He was ruthless versus spin, showed us three different kinds of sweeps. So I don't know if he has a paddle or not, but he has the reverse, conventional and slog. Look, dodgy versus pace, I'll agree. Quite dodgy. But he came in at 19 for 2, right? So that was a pressure situation. Yeah. And then you're replacing Babar as well. So, you know, if you take all of those things into context and it's your debut test match, your debut innings, going on to become the 13th Pakistani to score a debut ton, you know, in test cricket, that's still quite huge. And I don't think, like, again, to your savior point, neither of Kamran, Numan or Sajid should be looked upon as saviors, right? No. This is not something that will work everywhere, but it worked in this one, and those conditions really suited Kamran Ghulam's game.
Yeah, I don't. The longer I watched him bat, the more I wasn't sure what quality of a batter he was. I know he's got a good first class record, which always makes me feel comfortable because it, you know, he's played a lot of cricket in first class cricket at this stage, and he's an experienced player. So I'm hoping I'm wrong, but some of those running down the wicket slogs, I know we've got Ben Duckett playing in this test match and we've got Siam Ayoub and they've both played some fantastically weird shots of recent times. But I kind of feel that their shots are more modern cricket shots that went wrong. And there's a couple of times when I was watching Ghulam and I was just thinking, that's just a dirty slog and you're not thinking this through. And I hate slagging off someone who's made runs and put a team in a position to win the game. And they did go on to win the game. But that dismissal at the end of day one was, I think you were on the WhatsApp at the time. You probably saw I was going, I was just like, I cannot believe he would play a shot like that. Having said that, I do think he plays spin quite well. I didn't think he played seam particularly well. Having said, there was a bit of reverse and the ball was keeping maybe a little bit low or shooting through at times. So because he didn't play seam particularly well at that stage doesn't mean that we always have to worry about it.
He played in two really difficult sort of phases in that innings, right? First phase was when he came into bat at 19 for 2 and the new ball was breaking for England. It didn't really break for them after it got old, but in that first innings, the new ball was crucial for the spinners. And then, you know, in that period where it started to reverse, he played cast and pots or at least survived them. And in the middle, he got dropped as well on 79. But generally, you know, he seemed to be someone who can be a good Asian batter. I would just not be particularly convinced at this point that he could cut it in Senna. But maybe I'm wrong, right? I would be happy to be proven wrong. And he's someone who's experienced. His age is registered as 29, but I would assume it's like 32. Right. And this is also someone who back in 2013 scored 102 off 56 deliveries versus England in an under-19s game. And he was also playing in England. Hoyle and Swain or something in the summer. So they, their newspaper or something published an article saying Hoyle and Swain's Kamran Ghulam smashes 100 on Test debut versus England. So it's a feel-good story. But once again, he is not the saviour. No one is. And there's a lot wrong still with Pakistan's entire cricket, really.
But the one thing I will say is, if you go back to my piece about the selections and everything that we talked about, I did actually say that there was a chance that the player replacing him would make 100.
Yeah.
It's a shame, though, that I did not back that, because I don't know what the odds would have been, but it would have been pretty good. The issue isn't whether this player made runs or not, and it's really important that people understand that. The issue is, you've now got a player who's come in who's made 100, but he knows if he fails in a couple of games, he could get discarded because Babar Azam just got discarded. It's about professionalism and consistency and everything else. But well done to him. I liked that he wanted to attack. I liked that he did put England off a little bit at times. I just wish he wasn't attacking Shoaib Bashir with the new ball right before stumps, trying to hit inside out over cover for 12. But well done, and you know, what a moment for him to come in under all that pressure in that kind of a situation and do that. And if nothing else, he's got 100 on debut and he knows he's set up a win. Like, job done, retire.
Yeah, I mean, despite whatever shortcomings we've discussed, this is still huge for Kamran Ghulam. What he's achieved is phenomenal, remarkable, really, because of all of the toxic climate that had been created. And he's worked really hard in domestic. And sure, he may have flaws, but he really seized the moment. And there were other Pakistan batters who did well as well. I mean, Saim Ayub was the most patient I've ever seen him in Test cricket in this one, right? 77 in the first innings, 22 in the second, 99 runs across two innings on this surface is you know, quite good. And I saw some growth in his game, which is promising. But I think the most important runs from Pakistan's batting perspective came from Salman Ali Agha. 31 in the first innings where he was targeting the third man fence consistently, and that's how he got out. But that's 63 runs, you know, in the third innings for Pakistan. That is the reason why Pakistan got to their highest third innings total in 2024. Yep. And he was attacking the spinners, Leach in particular. He loves to play Jack Leach. And England dropped him twice when he was at like 4 and 6. So he really made them pay as well. I feel like that knock of 63 is what kind of cemented Pakistan's win. Because if England was chasing like 230, maybe they would have been a bit more optimistic about their chances, right?
Yeah, I think the issue was always going to be if England ever got on like a run, what happens to Pakistan with all the losses and everything. I mean, you know, we talk about winning being a habit and losing being a habit. Yeah. Kind of what we mean in those situations, what we really mean is, it's a bit of a silly phrase that we use in sport, but what we mean is, if you're used to winning, you are used to situations where you're not playing particularly well and working out how to get through them, right?
Yeah.
If you are used to losing, when that happens again, you automatically think, this isn't, no, it can't be, right? And and when because they were in front in that game as well, and they started to do that. So if he hadn't made those runs, I know, what did England end up making? 135, 40?
144.
So they batted horrendously and made 144, right?
Yep.
If they're set 230 or 240, I just wonder then what kind of a match situation that they would have been.
I mean, anything over
220 would have been a hell of a chase, but you know, because the wicket was going by then.
Even 200, I would say, but then again, you know, scoreboard pressure is a thing, and 297 are a lot of runs. They couldn't score 297 in the first innings, right, England?
297 in the history of cricket anywhere is tough. In Asian conditions is tough. When you're playing on day nine of a test match. Do you know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be able to chase 297. Like, we'll get to England in a moment. There was a question about Ben Stokes that we can get to that I think is quite interesting. But when it comes down to it, you shouldn't be able to chase that. And especially on a wicket like that, when it was spinning, you know, with good quality spinners. Manon sent a message in about, if and when Bubba returns to the 11, who makes way? He's not going to return for this series, so it's going to be away matches, right? And if that's the case, that's a much easier decision. Yeah, so that's a much easier decision to bring him in. Who do you drop?
I would think that maybe Babar comes in to bat at 3 over there, because if they want to play all of these, like if they want to play Kamran Ghulam and Sauchakil, the both of them, then there can't be a vacancy at 4 and 5. which means that one of the openers will go and Shan will move as opener, potentially. I'm not saying that this will happen. Yeah, but that's the only way I can think of fitting him in if you want to play both of Kamran and South. But yeah, overall, I feel like Pakistan won some key moments, especially with the bat, right? Some very, very crucial partnerships. And that phase where they reduced England to 225 for six, you know, after they had England had scored 211 runs. Yeah, they were 211 for two. And then there was even a 29-run last wicket partnership that kind of took England a bit closer to Pakistan's score. But ultimately, it didn't matter. And yeah, I think we've spoken all about Pakistan. We do have to talk about England as well, but we'll
I don't think we have to go massively on England.
Yeah, but we'll come to that after this short break. You're watching Overthrows with Jared and Behram, and we'll be just right back.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here. Because I needed this to change my SIM card, and when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, or one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, or one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And when it comes to England, Jared, of course, this is Bazball's second iteration. They just recently lost to Sri Lanka at the Oval and they broke tons of records in the first test in Multan, which they won. So now, of course, they were put to the test, really, made to play in conditions that we all know don't suit them. And it's not ideal for Bazball. That's the one way teams have kind of managed to beat them, apart from pragmatic Pat Cummins. But before anything else, batting, bowling, screw that. Let's talk about England's fielding. It was terrible. Salman Ali Agha was dropped twice in that Brighton Cass over, a sitter by Jamie Smith and then root in the slips. South Shaqeel
I honestly
was dropped.
Thought Stokes was going to explode during that over.
Yeah, and he even apologised.
We're just
going to
see chunks of Stokes on the field. He apologised, did he?
Yeah, he said that I apologised to the guys right after, later that day, and because he did show his frustration. But I would be frustrated too, because not too long ago, before that double drop over, South Shaqeel had been dropped very early on in his innings. Another good player of spin, someone you don't want to drop. Kamran Ghulam was dropped in the first innings, as we mentioned, on 79. Yeah. There were a couple of more drops on top of these things. And then they weren't even lucky, because there was a point where Rizwan was on six in the first innings and there was an edge and no one heard it and they never reviewed it. So that, I feel, was the major difference between both teams, because Pakistan barely made any mistakes after that, fumble, the run-out fumble from Sajid. And England just made plenty.
Yeah, they just weren't very sharp. I mean, the thing I would say, and I know we'll get into the batting in a moment, and probably Jack Leach is worth talking about as well, but the thing I would say is that they play a volatile format, a style of cricket, right? Yeah. You know, there is an element of the way that they play cricket means that they can upset a good side like Australia or India, but they can lose to South Africa, right? And they can, you know, lose a test against New Zealand that they're absolutely bossing. And so it's hard to, after what we saw in the last test, it is hard to put the boot in, right? Because they are still not a great cricket team. Like they, you know, I'm a big fan of Potts, but Potts and Cass is not the greatest bowling attack of all time. Shoaib Bashir is still on work experience, right?
To be fair to Brighton Cass, I feel like Brighton Cass has been the best seamer on show in this entire series. Like he's got nine wickets in two test matches at 24 apiece.
I think he bowled really well, but they used to have Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad, right? Do you know what I'm just saying? They've got Shoaib Bashir and they used to have Moeen Ali. Like everyone's a downgrade, right? Like Cass might go and be a fantastic bowler. I know England are very, very keen on him being the next Liam Plunkett and they really believe that's who he's going to be. And I thought Liam Plunkett was a fantastic cricketer who should play a lot more tests than he did. So no, I'm not slagging them off. What I'm saying is that they have a team where they have Potts and Cass. Potts hasn't played much away from home. Cass hasn't played that much cricket, really.
Yeah, especially, this is his debut series also.
Yeah. He's but just in general, he hasn't played. He's been injured for years, right? Like, he really hasn't played as much cricket as you would want. And so they should be inconsistent, right? And let's get to their batting. We won't. We'll get to their bowling. I thought Jack Leach looked really good early on in this test match.
Yeah, he's taken seven wickets in both test matches. So he's the leading wicket taker at 14.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much I thought. I just thought that, what's the best way of putting it? I thought Bashir outbowled him. My concern with Leach, and as you said before, Salman Aga might have got to him a little bit. Leach going at 4 runs and over, he took 3 wickets. So I'm not worried about that. He shouldn't be going at 4 runs and over, the kind of bowler that he is, unless Rishabh Pant is playing against him, and then I happily give him a pass, or Travis Head. Maybe I'm being unfair, and maybe Salman Aga is another player that you need to put in that kind of a list. But I thought that if you put a wicket out that spun, the best spinner in the game would be Jack Leach. And I'm not sure he bowled better than Shoaib Bashir in this game. And that would be a concern if I was Pakistan. Are they called? England.
England, yeah. No, I kind of agree with you, because I think Leach bowled far better in the first than he did in this test, even though there's 7 wickets in both. And in the first innings in this one, you know, there were some poor shots as well, especially at the start, which kind of brought about dismissals, especially Shan's dismissal. But if you look at Bash in the third innings, his 4 for 66 was better than any spell that Jack Leach bowled in the game, because all of a sudden it kind of turned the game on its head. But I was still most impressed by Brydon Carse amongst all the bowlers, because I saw him bowl 20 overs in the first innings where the ball wasn't really doing much. And as Varun is telling us over here, he's also drawn the best false shot percentage in this test match for all bowlers, 30%, which is amazing. 3 for 50 in 20 overs. That is quite a shift.
Yeah, the reverse spell that he bowled, when what would they have been then? It was after their 2 wickets. So would they have been about 100 for two or 150 for two or something at that stage? He should have got 3 or 4 wickets in that spell, realistically.
Honestly, they dropped those catches, you know?
But just forget the drops. He should have had an LBW. He should have had bowls. Mm. There were balls zinging around everywhere. It was a fantastic spell of bowling. And I felt for anyone who bowls a spell that good and doesn't get a wicket, you know, you just sit there and go, well, that's not fair, is it? And especially to someone earlier on in their career. So I thought him and Shoaib Bashir bowled well. I thought Matthew Potts bowled a couple of good spells as well.
Yeah,
but Leach was down a little bit, and this is not throwing Leach under the bus. I thought Leach is the best spinner in this test, right? And I didn't think he was the best spinner when it came down to this test. And you know, maybe that's the difference. Maybe it's not. But he still got 7 wickets, as you said. But I just didn't feel... I just thought that he should have been the bowler that kept England in this game. And he probably just wasn't that bowler. And that's probably why they've ended up behind. But let's get to their batting. So there's a... Yeah. I don't even think it was a super chat. I think it was just a normal comment from Sharon, who says, in general, how do you rate Ben Stokes' batting in Asian conditions? Do you think he's a bit overrated here compared to Australia, England, and South Africa? Is he rated in Asia? So yeah. I remember going to, when I was working for TalkSport, and we went to Sri Lanka in 2018, 2019. It was probably my first series of traveling with TalkSport. I remember telling everyone there, he can't play spin in Asia. Like, no one was really accepting it at that stage. And we've seen him play some decent knocks. I'm not saying he'll never make runs there. He really struggles with off spin in general. And when you take him to Asia, he struggles more. But his other problem is he's a very good player of left arm finger spin in places like Australia and South Africa and England. When the bounce is true and you're not coming out of the footmarks violently, right? But if you look at his record, he's much better when the ball bounces consistently or above what you would think it would go. Well, obviously, Asia is not a place where that happens all that much. And I do think it affects him. He threw his bat away today, right? But let's be honest, he was playing reverse sweeps over and over again with a fielder out for the reverse sweep when he could have just swept with the spin and hit it really hard and probably still picked a gap. His thought process when he's batting against spin in Asia, for me, has never really followed.
I mean, even this test was so random, because when it was easier to face spin, in that England first innings, the ball was only turning off the rough patches. Later on, it was turning up right down the middle as well. So that was a very difficult period. He has more runs when it was more difficult, right? He scored one in the first innings. He's just a weird cricketer. But England all over, I feel like they were undone or outspun on this surface. Of course, that does not include Ben Duckett, who was the only English batter to cross 37, right, in this test match. A ridiculous stunt.
Was he?
Brought out. Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't realized that's a good stat, isn't it? Jeez. You take that.
Only batter to score above 37. Brilliant 114, where he brought out all of his different sweeps. I don't think he paddled, but there were a variety of sweeps. And, you know, I just love his transformation personally from being someone who was dropped and not deemed good enough in Asia or whatever after that tour. And now he's come and become the backbone in many ways, him and Crawley, of Bazball. And he's averaging 42 after 28 test matches with just 400s, which tells you that he consistently gets runs as well.
Yeah.
And in these conditions, he was the perfect batter. I know he got a duck in the second innings, but that 114 was just top, top quality. And, you know, he is a very, I feel like underrated to the point where if I have to pick my top three test openers today, I'd go Khwaja, Rohit and Ben Duckett. I think I'd take him over Karunaratne.
What about Jaiswal?
Oof. Yeah, I hadn't thought of him.
Yeah, you probably take Jaiswal for. I bet.
Yeah.
But yeah, fourth. I know Jaiswal hasn't played. Not that Duckett's been around that much longer in his second reincarnation. Look, I think he's been fantastic. The problem is the second innings, right? Like, I don't mean that as in he doesn't get credit for the first innings, but I mean as in even on the days when he's, or in the test matches, he's incredible. He will play a shot like at that flap that he played in the second innings. And we saw that in India, didn't we? We saw some brilliant innings in India and some of the worst shots we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of takes away from his overall impact. But because he could score, what's his strike rate? Is it around 88, 89? I mean, it's really high.
Look, he got to his 50 or 43 deliveries and he ended up with a strike rate of 85 in this innings. And I mean, he leaves nothing, right? So that makes sense. And then he sweeps a lot in a test match where sweeping was the main weapon for all of England's batters. They were sweeping left, right and center, right?
That Joe was their Root, wait, strategy. Hey, Joe Root swept off the wrong foot. He did do you know what the Sombor shuffle is?
Is it the Crawley sweep?
No, Sombor shuffle is the Joker in the NBA. When he shoots, he sometimes shoots off the wrong foot. So because he, instead of shooting off his left foot, he shoots off his right foot, which means that the person can't block it because they're not ready.
Yeah.
Joe Root was putting the wrong leg out to sweep. So if you're sweeping and you're a right-hander, you put your left leg out. He was putting his right leg out so that he could do a conventional sweep or a non-conventional sweep. England's ability to innovate, even when they're getting smashed in the face, is so, it's hilarious watching it. It's just like, has he just changed cricket right in front of me? Or is that the worst thing he's ever done and it won't work? Because now, I promise you, the next time I play a game, I'm going to try and do that. Because if you can sweep conventionally and reverse from the same position, I think that makes it a lot tougher for the bowler to work out what you're about to do. So 25% of shots versus sweeps by England with sweeps. I think they've been higher than that before, Varun, by the way. I think I've seen a match where they were 30%. So look, that's how they play. They never really looked like it when the pressure was on, when the ball was really ragging towards the end.
Time for some celebratory chai and samosas of Behram. Well, I mean, having never watched Pakistan win a test match from the ground was something that I really need to get that monkey off my back.
Yeah,
right? So it does feel nice in that regard. But just to kind of finish up on England's batting, look, now they have kind of been exposed versus spin, and we already knew that after the India tour as well. Look, there will be knocks like Duckett's because sometimes, you know, there's one person in the batting which really puts everything into perspective. And his innings just goes on to become even more greater, considering how poorly everyone else batted. Like, Harry Brooke was completely at sea. Joe Root is bound to fail at some point, right? And if he had some luck with LBW calls in the first test, well, he had some bad luck in this one, I feel. That also happened, so it kind of evened itself out. But the main takeaway is that England have an opener who sweeps a lot, leaves nothing, and then also scores at a ridiculous rate, averaging 42 in 28 test matches. And I feel like that's the biggest positive you can take to the next test, because there's not much else. Like, everyone pretty much failed. And Stokes was playing like short putt or whatever with his bat. That was quite a moment.
Wow. I mean, It is crazy. Let's finish off because you've got to go get a bus.
Yes, I do have to catch a bus.
We've got one last super chat, don't we?
Yeah, we have one last super chat, and there's one thing that we have two last super chats. Yeah.
Oh, okay, I want to ask you something as well.
I don't think that they can curate a turning track in Rawalpindi. I spoke to Sean today, and he doesn't even feel too confident about it. And he's like, I will be hoping that the sun dries stuff up. And Akib Javed, this was his strategy, right? The new selector, that we'll go in with all spinners on a turning track. How do you reproduce that? And if you go green top, then you just lose the series, which you so, you know, dramatically squared up.
It's a fair question. And it's one of those things that because they're changing midway through, it is really tough. I also don't think that necessarily just having a spinning wicket was what won them this test. So I'm not sure that I suddenly think if you do another spinning wicket that Jack Leach isn't going to suddenly bowl really well. Pakistan didn't play Shoaib Bashir particularly well. So I don't know. But yes, if you can't do it, then you're in trouble. But realistically, there's an element of fluke to this win, and I don't want to downplay what Pakistan did, because to go from losing one of the most important, one of the biggest loss of their life ever to this is absolutely massive. So I don't want to downplay that at all. Yeah. But, it was a ninth they pitch, and, you know, all those sorts of things happened. They got rid of all their best players and still won, and all these things happened. So I think from that point of view, it's hard to repeat anyway. But hey, do whatever you can do, and maybe they'll get it there.
I mean, they were desperate for a win, right? And they had to end the streak. And a lot of things went in their favor. That combination really helped them, you know, winning the toss and everything. And even if your seamer broke down, you didn't need him. There were lots of things like that. So many batters, they just scored in single figures, right? The captain wants...
You're going to miss your bus. You're going to miss your bus.
Yeah, I will. I will miss my bus. But I feel like...
Read the questions. We've talked about the thing. No one cares. Oh, I like that. That's a good way to
Palash Sasidharan with the first super chat. South Africa are favourites. What if?
Yeah, I think New Zealand have been pretty good this tournament, to be fair. I think some of it has been conditions-based and some good tosses. But I've been pretty impressed by the way they have played. So I don't think there's much in it, really. I would definitely have South Africa starting as favourites, but like, maybe South Africa's like 53% chance of winning and Pakistan, who are we? New Zealand, 47%.
New Zealand. I would just say 50-50 because it's a final and both of those teams haven't won it. So anything could happen, really. Not a game I would bet on, that's for sure. Faisal Ratani says, Behram, good post-match questions. Thank you.
that's gonna stick with you for a while.
Yeah. Kachua Chop says, did ICC get it right with the incentive structure for the Women's World Cup? Also, of the three games yesterday that proved your pre-game comments wrong, which game surprised you the most? I think 46 all out, maybe. But then India coming back into the game, that game is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I did say that I thought there was a chance that Pakistan would win this second test. I wasn't wrong on. Not that I would have put any money on it, although I did actually make quite a bit of money on that game. But and I was betting on Pakistan. And what was the third one? I don't know what the other game is, but unless he means West Indies.
That was the biggest surprise. I think South Africa. South Africa defeating Australia. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's easy. That and the West Indies England. That and the West Indies England are the two incredible upsets. And yeah, I would never have thought either of those were possible.
True. Same. And also, he was asking about the incentive structure or whatever.
A quick one. I've seen a couple of people put comments in there. No. Because the Australian women and the English women and the Indian women also would have liked that money. It's life-changing money for pretty much every woman outside of, I don't know, Elise Perry, right? Like, and Harmanpreet maybe. Right? Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely life-changing for everyone. I don't think anyone has played harder because there's more money involved, because winning a World Cup is always... If you won a World Cup before this pay structure was involved, it's still life-changing, right? So I don't think this had anything to do with it. I'm sure people will say that, but I don't believe it.
Yeah. All right. Soham Bhattacharya says, apparently the EAM, Jay Shankar's visit to Pakistan, or after it, there's a rumor or possibility of the Indian team traveling to Pakistan for the Champions Trophy. Thoughts? I wouldn't believe it. I don't think that's that simple that you have a dignitary from India over and you sort that stuff out. Maybe they've come to some sort of a solution, or maybe you've spoken about it, but it's just a stance that I don't really see changing. I mean, I would be hard-pressed to see India playing Pakistan. Like, I just cannot see that one happening.
I don't think me and Bayram have ever thought there was a possibility that India would play in Pakistan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd happily be wrong because I think it's a great thing for cricket, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, same. All right, one last super chat from Fox Awan says, so my question is off the left field. Azam Mahmood's debut had two debut hundreds. Ali Naqvi also got one. Whatever happened to him? I have no idea what happened to Ali Naqvi, but Azam Mahmood is the assistant coach, right?
He's doing well. I don't. I mean, is Ali Naqvi, is he like a Adrian Barath of Pakistan cricket? Do you remember Adrian Barath?
Yeah, I do. West Indies, right?
Yeah, he made 100 as well. Look, I think what you're kind of talking about there are a lot of people who come in and if you go through the history of cricket, it's actually fascinating how often someone will come in and make 100 in the first couple of games or take a bunch of wickets, and you never hear of them. Was it Toby Rowland-Jones for England? Yep. Martin de Lange for South Africa. Martin Love. Like, I could go through the list forever.
Ali Naqvi from Pakistan.
Ali Naqvi from Pakistan. Rodney Redmond, I think. Doesn't Rodney Redmond have the highest batting average of all time? He played like a couple of tests for New Zealand and then produced a test child himself. That's how good he was at test cricket. He got another one. There's actually a lot of those in test cricket. And if Bryden Coverdale, not Bryden Carr, Bryden Coverdale has been going around doing lots of one test wonders, and he's done a great job with that. He's probably got enough to put a book together. But I actually think the more interesting one is the guys who probably play between 2 and 10 tests and do something incredible and still disappear.
Yeah, well, maybe we can do something on that, and it's a footmarks later. Someone's mentioned Karan Nair's 300. Yeah, that was a really good one as well.
Yeah, that's a perfect example.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, that wraps up our show. So thank you to everyone for the super chats and the general interaction in the comments. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. It could prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. We'll see you guys soon enough on another live show. I'll try to convince Jared to come on tomorrow again to review, preview Bangladesh, South Africa. So let's see if that works
out. One day.
Yeah. But anyway, have a good one, guys, and we'll be back soon enough. Take care.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.